Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, Moose on the Loose, one of my favorite perennial summer stories. We also check in with the locals that are making it work as entrepreneurs in Aspen. We check in with the weather, some promising news after a dry year, and we send you into the weekend with some big name events, as well as some off the beaten path Valley fun. Joining me today are Jason Auslander, reporter with the Aspen Times. Hi, Jason. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Allison. Thanks for having me.
Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun. Hi, Erica.
Thanks for having me, Allison.
And Cindy Hirschfeld, editor-in-chief of the Aspen Sojourner magazine. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome, Allison. Hi.
Thank you all for joining me. This is Valley Roundup. Well, let's start with some harder news before we get to all the fun stuff, Jason. There was a lawsuit filed against Pitkin County commissioners this week. Also, I guess, kind of against this proposed cabin that might be built on Aspen Mountain. Can you fill us in with that?
Yeah, so it's not really much of a surprise. Marcella Larson is the sort of was leading the charge against this because her family owns a A-frame cabin uphill a little bit from where they want to build this, and she came out pretty forcefully against it on a number of grounds. So it wasn't much of a surprise that they did file that.
So I think there's a couple things at place here, both in the lawsuit and probably the issues that are being taken by the neighbors. One of them is the building itself. So can you tell me about the cabin or what some of the issues are about building on Aspen Mountain?
Sure. So it's in the rural and remote zoning district, which was passed by commissioners in the 90s to basically stop people from buying mining claims in the backcountry and building massive houses or small houses, whatever the case may be, because of services. You know, they didn't want to have to invest all this money into a road that fire trucks could get up to, and so it's a very simple way of boiling it down. But so it's in this district. The most you can build in the district is 1,000 square feet.
Okay.
And so they want to build a 1,000 square foot cabin. It's a couple that live in Vail, but have some pretty long-standing ties to Aspen. So they want to build it in this stand of conifer trees, and you know they seem to have towed the line, and the main problem really with it is that they don't have access by vehicle.
So if you build a cabin, then the county has to build that road to you?
Yeah, I mean, if the county says that we're going to allow you to build your house, you know, way back in this area, then they're implying that they're going to provide you with emergency services, with, you know, all that comes with sort of civilization, I guess.
So some of it is the physicality of the building, that you have to build this road, maybe that it'll be in view planes of people who already live there. There's also, I thought, a pretty legitimate argument that the Pitkin County commissioners violated the Colorado Open Meetings Law. What is that element of the lawsuit?
Well, so she says that the day before they approved the cabin, and by the way, they're not going to have to build any extra roads for this one.
No.
The cabin is basically at the intersection of Little Annie and Richmond Hill Road.
Okay.
So there are some well-traveled roads that are already there. So they wouldn't have to
That's
do
not
that.
An issue this, here.
It's not an issue
okay.
here.
Okay.
They went on a site visit, which the people who wanted to build the cabin took them on the day before. And so the Larsons are saying that wasn't properly noticed. They didn't take minutes. And
a majority of the commissioners were at that meeting, and so it's a public meeting?
Three of the five. So okay. They were saying that they didn't notice it properly under the Open Meetings Act, and also had ex parte communications with the applicant. So that remains to be seen. I did get Patty Clapper on the phone yesterday. She was just about to get on a plane in California, but she said, I said, you know, did you have any of these sort of communications? And she said, no, I was very careful not to do that. I was running this site visit. We were careful not to do that. And furthermore, Greg Poschman, another commissioner, had to recuse himself from dealing with this issue because he had ex parte communications with Marcella Larson.
Okay.
So, you know, it's in a judge's hands now.
But so if there's three commissioners meeting at any given time, that is a public meeting, right? And they knew it was coming up. They could have noticed it and didn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how the notice came out. I was going to go on this, but I decided against. I just had something else to do, so I couldn't make it on. I've been on a site visit before. I went with them to the Redstone Castle not too long ago. It's certainly within their purview to do
okay.
a site visit. So, but I don't know whether it was noticed correctly.
Okay.
Or not,
so. And the point isn't, you know, that they did or didn't, you just tell us afterwards if you did or didn't have backdoor dealings. The point is that you could have, and that's why you have to invite the whole public, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's saying no member of the public was there and that she tried to go and couldn't, was somehow unable to attend the entire thing. So, you know, if a judge finds that they did that, it could nullify the approval and they would have to go through it again. But commissioners, when they approved it, said things like, gee, I can't find any reason to come out against this application. I mean, I think that they would rather not have people build in rural and remote, but,
okay.
you know, they do have a private property right to do that if they own this mining claim and have presented something that, you know, is good with the land use code.
So even if the judge finds that this meeting was improperly noticed and they have to kind of discount whatever happened there and re-vote, that doesn't mean that we change the outcome. We still get a new cabin on Aspen Mountain, most likely.
It could be. I mean, probably you would think, based on what they said, you know, I mean, George Newman was like, you know, they have this private property right to do this. They've done everything we've asked. They've done everything under the code we've asked, so...
All right.
There it is.
Is it something that we would see up as like skiers? Is this affecting the public at all?
No, it's on the backside. So it would probably affect people more in the summer because that road is generally used. I mean, I think cross country skiers use it in the wintertime, but I think it's more, it would definitely be seen because it's at the crossroads
it's
of
right
those
there.
Two,
okay.
you know, relatively well traveled roads back there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some other visitors to the valley. Erica, Robbie, you spoke with some of the officials trying to deal with multiple moose. Is moose? The
meese,
plural there?
Not
just kidding.
Multiple moose on the loose in Snowmass Village.
Yes. There were four moose sightings in Snowmass since May 20th, I believe is okay. when it was. And I guess it's been a growing issue for Snowmass in the last 5 or so years is when the officials said they really started to see this trend. So, and in Pitkin County, there have been two since, I think, late April.
Okay. So, and these are females and babies, like one of the most dangerous for those who might encounter these moose?
Exactly. Do not want to mess with a mama bear or moose or any mama animal.
Anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Humans included.
Exactly. So the police chief believes there are two female moose with their offspring, and he doesn't know exactly how many that is, but that's currently right now. And then I know that on our Aspen Times Facebook page, we posted the story, and someone added a photo of a moose giving birth in their lawn.
Wow.
So, yeah.
In Snowmass Village proper.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, exactly. Wow. I mean, just from their house looking down. It was wild. So,
I remember last year we had video of a moose in Aspen proper for maybe the first time, you know, documented. It does seem like they're coming more. We're going to have more of these human-moose interactions. Are people prepared for that? Does it sound like everyone knows how to act?
You know, it sounds like it's been a learning experience on all accounts, including the wildlife officials. They were saying, you know, a lot of people don't know that they're not to be messed with. It's not like a bear. It's, you know, they're dangerous and unpredictable is the word that the police chief kept going back to. And dogs especially, they were saying, you know, if you have a dog that, for some reason, moose in general view them as predators. So if you're walking a dog with a dog, that should also be taken seriously. So.
And I actually just spoke with the county's wildlife manager, Riri Baker, and she said that the moose sightings are the only things that have happened so far. Like there haven't been a whole lot of bear or any bear mountain lion stuff so far. And the other good news is that there wasn't a late freeze this year like last year, which basically sent all those bears into town for the crab apples. So
that's good.
Hopefully this year, if it starts to rain, at least they can have some food in the hills.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I'm wondering is if these increased sightings are teaching us something else about the ecosystem at large or maybe just our climate and how the year went.
Yeah, there must be a reason.
That's what, and I asked them because I was curious, and that's what kind of prompted me to realize that, I mean, they're just learning about this too. You know, they deferred me to the the Colorado Parks and Wildlife. They're like, you know, we really don't know. There obviously probably are some ecological reasons behind this, but we're still learning it ourselves. So
yeah. And there's a photo on the Aspen Times Facebook page, you're saying?
Yes. So when we posted the story, someone posted a comment of a photo
of a moose giving birth
in their, or having just given birth in their lawn.
It was awesome. I'll try and link to that from the Valley Roundup page as well. I want to talk about the Intercept lot and some kind of summer camping, some year-round housing issues all come to a head along with just our transportation node at the Intercept Lodge.
You mean Aspen's newest affordable housing?
I literally wrote down that quote because you used that in the piece. So the story is that, even the title, it's now resident free, as if it, you know, there were homes there.
Well, and you know, that's not even overstating the case that really that much, because the last time, everybody remembers the Hatchet Man story that came around in March, right? Well, that guy, on the police report, Aspen Police listed his address as the Intercept Lot. And then the guys that he pulled the hatchet on appeared in court after this happened to plead for leniency for their buddy they're like, we all live at the Intercept Lot. We've got to all get along. So I think that, you know, that kind of was the impetus for.
So we have like a known community. We have a known living out of your car, kind of camping-ish in the back of the Intercept Lot community.
And you know, the guy with the hatchet I've interviewed before, his name is Justin Schaff, and he's told me for a story I did about a year ago that he's been living out there off and on for 6 years.
Wow.
So I mean, I think the word was just kind of getting out. Pickens County sheriffs basically tolerated it as long as people mostly stayed in line, but it came to a head with the hatchet thing, which wasn't as threatening as it sort of sounded like. But you know, the city owns that lease from CDOT, and if the Colorado Department of Transportation decides to say, you know, you can't use this as a campground,
yeah,
they could yank the lease, and that's a big linchpin in the whole transportation system in the Upper Valley here, so it would be a big problem.
You have this other line that Sheriff DeSalvo and his team are gently dislodging these residents from the transit center. Do you have insight as to, like, are they on such a first-name basis that they're going up and saying, like, hey, Bobby, move along?
Well, this is a small town, and, you know, Joe DeSalvo is kind of that sort of sheriff. So he went out there with his kind of second in command, or Alex Bruchetta or Ron or one of those guys, and talked to them, and then had stopped. You know, he told me 8 times in 3 weeks. He would sometimes he's big into riding his e-bike these days. So
newly approved e-bikes.
Yeah, so he would stop there on his e-bike and just kind of talk with them and say, look, this is happening. You know, we don't want to play hardball with you, but you know, it's time to go.
It is a different approach than was recommended right away by Mitch Osier, right?
Right. Yeah, and that, I think that took some people by surprise when he said that at the EOTC meeting in March in Snowmass Village, that they, you know, Joe took almost immediate exception with the word roust. He wasn't thrilled that was a word that was used to say we're going to get rid of these people. But, you know, I mean, the city basically used the same tactics that they wanted to use at the Intercept Lot last summer at the Buttermilk parking lot, when there were like 20 RVs. And I just found this out, that the public works director for the county had to call hazmat teams to clean up some black water that RVs had dumped in some trees under the Buttermilk parking lot. So, you know, it can be, you know, a problem.
Well, who are we talking about here? Because when I think RVs, I think maybe some people who are picking up summer jobs and just don't want to pay for summer housing and are living out of these, like, almost the same size as a studio apartment homes with sinks and toilets and all that. Or, you know, people who are camping throughout Colorado, and they hear, hey, if you want to hang out in Aspen, the best place to park your Sprinter or whatever is the Buttermilk lot. Are we talking these people, or are we talking year-round, you know, decades-long residents of Aspen?
I think we're talking about all of it. I mean, I think that we're talking about people who just kind of want to hang out and not have to pay for housing, and if they have an RV, great. A lot of people are just camping in, like, Justin just lives in his Jeep Cherokee.
Okay.
So some people are just living in their car. Some people, Joe said that one woman was an Uber driver, and she had, like, a big old, like, almost Chrysler-type limousine, and she was pulling a trailer behind it, and she would just live there and then drive Uber. And so I think it's a combination of – I know that some construction workers would do something similar, you know, that rather than drive all the way back to, you know, Junction or wherever they're from, find a place to just sleep in the car. And Pickens County doesn't have an ordinance saying that you can't sleep by the side of the road in your car in unincorporated areas of the county.
I mean, that was a great part of the story for me. I was like, well, no way. Where else can we go?
But of course, don't make me write about you, Allison.
It brings up a more serious issue, right? We do have a place during the winter that there's something called the Aspen Homeless Shelter, but that is not an overnight shelter. That's a nonprofit. They partner with different places throughout the winter to provide sleeping space, but in the summer, they don't operate a place for people to come and sleep.
Right, right. And, you know, usually it's at the Catholic Church in town, and that was being renovated, so it was at the church, Our Lady of the Roundabout, this year. But it closes, and there isn't anywhere for them to go in the summer. A lot of them, there's various places that they camp. There's one, there's a spot below the intercept lot, there's a spot below the hospital, there's various places that, and frankly, the open space rangers are cleaning up more and more homeless camps. So
okay.
I think, you know, the county manager said that they are going to announce a partnership that sounds like it's going to be a summer shelter for homeless people.
Did they tell you anything else about that? I know they were being tight-lipped from reading your story.
I don't know anything about it more. John Peacock, the county manager, kind of wanted to keep it under wraps until they have it sort of officially, the partnership. So, but I think it's kind of along the lines of their mental health push that they've been doing, and that they'll have people available for that sort of, if somebody has mental health issues or, you know, whatever the case may be.
So it sounds like the Sheriff's Department's on a good enough term that they could kind of clear everyone out. They've officially said everyone's gone. Now there are some ramifications if they come back.
Yeah, so now the city parking department is taking over, and if your car's there more than 24 hours, they'll give you a $50 ticket and give you another like 48 hours or a total of 72 hours to move it, and then they'll tow it.
And then you mentioned Buttermilk Parking. They did institute fees to park there last summer. Are those back this year?
Yeah, same deal this year. Same deal.
Before our break, Cindy, I want to move to you. I always love reading your editor's note in every issue of Aspen Sojourner. I think they kind of hit right head on our community feel. This one is previewing that you have this article about some of the there's top attractions in Aspen, which are worth checking out, but there's also those other things that are maybe worth poking into, too. Can you give us a little insight?
Sure. I wrote about going to a masterclass last summer with Renee Fleming. And the masterclasses are cutting, I consider them this hidden gem of the music festival, where I keep meaning, I went to 1 year ago and it was great, and I kept meaning to go back. And then I finally went last summer. My neighbor had an extra ticket. And it was just such a, interesting behind-the-scenes look, in a way, at what an opera singer goes through to train and arrive at the state that they're in. And it made me think in a more general sense about, we all know about the Sunday concerts, for example, at the music festival, or, say, the Jazz Aspen June and Labor Day experience. And it's great to have those top-level events, but then it's also so worthwhile when you dig underneath, and look at that massive schedule the music fest has, for example, and see, like a free concert somewhere, or this master class, or some of their listening lectures, which I'd like to go to sometime. Jazz Aspen has the whole cafe series, people you might not go. And so those are just a couple of examples of, we have such a rich culture scene in the summer. I like to think I came up with something I call cultural guilt, because I feel guilty that I can't get to it
absolutely.
All. And every summer I start out now, I have all these grand plans, then ask me in August. But nonetheless, I do want to encourage people to dig beneath the surface.
How many people were at that master class that you talk about in your editor's note? Was it a full?
It was full. Well, it was at Harris Hall, so it was a smaller venue. Okay. But because it was Renee Fleming.
Well, that's the thing for our second tier, and I don't mean to say that in like a qualitative way, but second tier events to be with Renee Fleming. I mean, that's what we have to do.
That's our second tier. But they do actually have master classes throughout the summer, not just in opera, but in piano. I'd really like to get to one of those this summer, since I play piano. They have them for different instruments and vocals. So my example was the top shelf of the
second tier.
Yeah.
And you had some examples all the way down the valley, all the way to vaudeville.
Oh, yeah, exactly. The Vaudeville Theater, I think this is so cool. They are showing, it's called the Great K&A Train Robbery, if I have that correctly. And it was a silent movie that was made in Glenwood in 1926, and it was a really big deal at the time.
Wow.
And they're going to be showing it several times a week at the Vaudeville Theater. And then John Goss, who owns the theater, is going to impersonate the star, who he had described, I think, as like the Clint Eastwood of his time. And he's going to be in character and giving a behind-the-scenes look at the making of this movie and talking about little-known facts. And then at the theater, they have this machine that I'd never even heard of before, but it's some vintage sound effects machine, and it makes train sounds and horn sounds and all kinds of other stuff. So that will also be part of the film, of the soundtrack. So
is that in Glenwood?
In Glenwood Springs. At the the other nights they have the vaudeville show there. Nice. At the theater on Grand Ave, I think their main street.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me here in the studio to put this week's news into perspective for us are Jason Auslander, reporter with the Aspen Times, Cindy Hirschfield, editor-in-chief of Aspen Sojourner, and Erica Rabi. She's the editor of the Snowmass Sun. We'll be right back. Cindy, also in this issue of the Aspen Sojourner, you have this article, How 10 Young Professionals Have Forged Sustainable Careers in Aspen. I think that's the longer online headline, and then there's mm-hmm. a catchy headline for the print edition, too.
yeah, the kids are all right.
There we go. it features just that. It highlights young locals. Where did that idea even come from? I mean, why is that a notable thing to talk about here?
Well, I would like to take credit for thinking it up all by myself. I can't. Steve Wicks, who he and his wife have been longtime operators of a liquor store up in Snowmass, he came to me. Well, he had been talking to a friend of mine about this idea, and she said, oh, you should go to Cindy and talk about it. And his son has come back to the Valley after growing up here and trying some things elsewhere and is now managing the family business, the liquor store. And Steve was saying how his son thought that he would never be able to return here mm-hmm. and actually, make a living and think of starting a family. And how he's noticed that a lot of his peers have been able to do the same thing. And we talked about how there just seems to be a trend of people who grew up in the Valley, went away to college or whatever, and have been able to come back here and not just work at any de facto job to kind of scrape it together, but really pursue something that they're interested in and they're passionate in. So I thought that was a great idea for a story. And we got a lot of input from people, potential names.
Okay.
And the writers on the story, Catherine Lutz and Barbara Platts, we did a lot of back and forth about, do you know this person? What do you think of this? Do you think this is this person's really passionate about their career? And so we ultimately, it was hard to make the cut, but we only had so much room to feature people. And we came up with these 10 that we thought was a good cross-section of different types of careers, balance of male, female, et cetera.
It is heartwarming because, as I do housing issues a lot, but even things with like Maker in Place and different pop-ups and mm-hmm. Stuff that comes up, it is a lot of local kids. And what you realize is if they go away at all, if they go to college, if they try out anything, if they get any perspective of the world besides Aspen, then when they come back, they're right here with the rest of us who are just moving to the Valley, right? Like they don't have that work history. They don't have the hookups. They don't have any way of getting in. And yet this is their hometown. Like you said in the article, when your hometown's one of the most coveted places to live, it can be a challenge.
It is a challenge, and everybody admitted that it was a challenge. People said that having friends and family here as support definitely helped. Some people mentioned that. And before I came on today, I asked the two writers if they could give me a little bit of input on what they thought writing the story. So I want to relay a couple of their thoughts
Wonderful.
On it. And Catherine admitted to me today for the first time. She said that when I asked her if she was interested in the assignment, that she had to herself kind of rolled her eyes and thought, oh, another story about millennials and how great they are. But then she talked to the people, she did her interviews, and she said she, her view completely changed. And now she said, she's like, I'm so proud that they're here. They're really inspiring and motivating. And she said, I think there's hope for the world with young people like these in our midst.
Wonderful.
And then Barbara, who is a millennial, her perspective was interesting. She said she expected people to have kind of a love-hate relationship with Aspen, and that she didn't find that.
Okay.
When she was talking to people, she said that, you know, the millennials she talked to, that they really love this place, they really love being here, and but they also didn't expect to have anything handed to them coming back here and trying to forge a living. She said there was no sense of entitlement, and they're just here working really hard and really psyched that they were able to make it work that way.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Jason, this next story I actually heard, overheard people talking about while I was on a hike. And like, hey, did you hear there's going to be a monsoon? And then the other one was like, I did, I hear. So this is talk around town now that there will be a strong early monsoon season predicted for Western Colorado. You know, that doesn't sound exactly right.
Well, I mean, it's not an exact science, as the guy told me.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I was just looking about, really, really wondering about fire restrictions and if they had any predictions about the monsoon season. So I was talking to the forecaster in Grand Junction at the National Weather Service, and he said, oh, have you looked at the Climate Prediction Center? And I was like, no, what is that? And he directed me, and it's actually a government agency in Maryland, I believe. And so they had this map that showed this bullseye that, you know, could, that it's 50% chance of a decent monsoon season starting. So, you know, who knows? I mean, it's I was telling you before, the emergency management director for the county wasn't happy with me. Well, she wasn't unhappy. She was just kind of, she's like, oh,
here,
great,
go.
Now people
yeah.
aren't going to take my wildfire warning seriously. So, you know, I think everybody hopes that that's going to happen. June is always hot and dry here, so we need to get through that first. The monsoons generally start, you know, around July 4th. So this forecaster citing this Climate Prediction Center data says, you know, it could start earlier this year. So who
okay.
knows? But I mean, really, the most exciting thing in that whole thing was, because he was talking, he's like, we're out of the La Nina cycle, we're back to neutral now. He's like, but they're predicting better than 50% chance of El Nino this winter for 18 and 19. And so I knew people around here would want to hear that.
That means better snow. Definitely better snow than this last year.
Well, yeah. So La Nina, the storms go north of us. The high pressure pushes the storms into the northern Rockies and California. And with El Nino, the jet stream drops. So it comes down, and if you live in the Southwest, you get a good winter.
Okay, Jason's saying it's going to be good snow. And
Jason is not saying
that. You heard it here first.
Jason is not saying that.
One thing I'm wondering if you ask about, so what happens, though, when you have an area that's been in a lot of drought and then gets a lot of rain, that's when we see, like, mudslides. That's when we see the earth cannot absorb it. Is there any chance of that? Did you guys get to
well,
that?
Well, the other thing that this guy may have downplayed a little bit, because I've been speaking to, you know, people in the fire district and that sort of thing,
okay.
is that it could be bringing a lot of lightning.
Oh.
And so you don't want that necessarily with. But on the other hand, I spent 10 years, I'm from Tucson, and I spent 10 years in New Mexico, and the forests are closed down there. Like, there are cops guarding the entrances to the forest. You cannot get in there because it's a tinderbox. And I've been down there when it's been like that before, and I was asking the fire guy, Fire Parker, today if that's ever happened here. Have they ever actually closed the forest? And he said he couldn't remember that.
Okay.
So just this much further north makes a big difference.
Hmm. Erica, let's send it out with what's coming up this weekend. I kind of think of this as the official start to summer, maybe more as a local, but Snowmass Village kind of kicks it off.
Yeah. this is summer for Snowmass. It's open for the books. On Saturday, they're doing their third annual beer festival. More than 30 breweries from across the state will be in Snowmass. And then the first concert series of the summer kicks off Saturday.
Was there a little bit of discussion of having that move? I mean, that is a Thursday concert local
yes.
thing. Was there a discussion around that at all?
Absolutely. I think my understanding is that Snowmass Tourism got a lot of feedback on, we like the Thursday concert, you know, don't mess up a good thing. That's at least my notion. And so they have 10 consecutive Thursday concerts this summer with two, quote-unquote, bonus Friday ones. And that's the one this Friday kicking it off, and then the Deaf Camp Benefit, July 21.
Oh, wonderful. So, do you know what locals think of this beer festival that comes? Like you said, it's the third year, and it takes over the mall.
It does. And last year it sold out. And as of last week, Rosabella with Snowmass Tourism was saying they were, you know, on pace to sell out, and it's bigger this year. So I think it's really well received. I also think it draws people. I was talking with the event producers, and they were saying a lot of people from the Front Range actually come up for it. And it is one of the highest elevation beer festivals in the country. So, yeah, of course.
Bang for your buck, then.
Exactly.
I'm going for the first time this year.
You are.
I
yeah.
am too.
Yeah, I've been out of town the last last couple. By the way, you said the concert Friday. Is it
Saturday?
Saturday.
Sorry, okay. Saturday. Okay. Thank you for that.
Just wanted to make that clear.
Thanks. Yes, don't go to Snowmass Friday for our concert.
Well, you'll find some
but
reporters
go for first
if you go to the
this going on?
Beer yeah. Festival.
It's Carbondale.
Oh, the Friday Mall.
Yes, I'm going to let you guys talk off mic about that. You've been listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thank you to Jason Oslin, a reporter with the Aspen Times, Erica Robbie, editor of Snowmass Sun, and Cindy Hirschfeld, editor-in-chief of the Aspen Sojourner magazine.